This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. The most memorable interviews and listener calls from the week that was on Fight Back with Libby Znaimer. Welcome to the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Saturday edition of the Best of Fight Back from the week that was. We began the week with our Zoomer squad and the reaction to the Prime Minister's budget roadshow. Justin Trudeau has been touring the country, making tens of billions of dollars in pre-budget announcements. And what of promises already made? We have often talked about how long it takes the Trudeau Liberals to actually hand out promised money. As we've seen, Canadians have had to re-elect them once or twice before promises are delivered. As an example, a new poll finds widespread support for a new disability benefit that was passed into law last summer. But so far, they have not made good on that promise. Bill Van Gorder is Chief Advocacy and Education Officer of CARP. Anthony Quinn is Chief Community Officer at CARP, and Lauren Bozanoff is President of Forum Research.
You know what? First of all, I think it's too little too late. He's many, many years into his, since he first became Prime Minister. I think people are getting a little bit tired of him and just throwing money at problems without seemingly to actually solve any problems. And I think that's going to backfire on them.
Anthony, speaking of the roadshow, what about these pre-budget, these budget measures that we've been hearing about? I mean, I don't think there will be much of anything that's a surprise in the actual budget next week. How have CARP members been reacting, and what do you think? Is there enough in there for older Canadians?
I'm surprised at just how much of a roadshow it is. Budgets used to be something that were quite private and not revealed until after the lockup. And you were in those media lockups in the past when the budget was a state secret until the day it was announced. Now they're using it for purely political purposes. I think the voters will see through it, unfortunately.
Is there anything in there that you like or really don't like? Bill?
Yeah, well, there certainly have been some announcements that begin to appeal. The problem is the announcements he's making, the one that we're going to be talking about around disability, the dental care, the pharmacare, have not been full announcements. They're just announcements. We're planning to do something with no meat in them, no details, and announcing them many times. So is there anything that they're actually doing right now, where there's action that we can see? Not currently, no.
It's interesting, this whole change of approach. Again, very late in the mandate, the Prime Minister really looks pumped, Lauren, and his poll numbers have gone up a little bit lately for the Liberals, but still, it's hard to see them catching up to the Conservatives.
Yeah, they're in a disaster situation right now. And remember, he took them from a disastrous situation when they were like the third or fourth party, whatever they were. When he took over, the Liberals were really down in the dumps, and they may end up there again unless they can turn this around. And I think just throwing money at problems or talking about throwing money at problems and maybe not actually even doing it is not nearly enough for them.
And what about this roadshow? You're saying people are seeing through it. Is there any value in it?
They're paying people off with their own dollars, and they're unfortunately putting it on the backs of future generations. $10 billion deficits have turned into $40 billion deficits. Who knows what this budget will have? But it's money that we don't have. We're borrowing it, and we have to pay the cost.
One thing we do know is that people are not turning out in droves to attend these announcements. If you look at any of the photos or watch them, all the people you see in the background are party people who have to be there. They're certainly not appealing to the general public and don't seem to be making much effort to get the general public to come out to them. They're very quiet pre-announcement. They're really intended for the the media, not for the local people. And I think the local people are seeing through that.
As opposed to what Pierre Poilievre is getting with his election style rallies, I guess.
Well, he is, and he's not announcing anything, and he's getting much more attention than the prime minister is. It's interesting to see the different approaches of the two parties, and then you have the NDP, who don't really seem to be anywhere these days ever since the PharmaCare announcement.
Bill Van Gorder, CARP's Chief Advocacy and Education Officer, Anthony Quinn, CARP's Chief Community Officer, and Lauren Bozanoff, President of Forum Research. This is Zoomer Radio's Best of Fight Back. I'm Jane Brown. There is more reaction to a letter signed by six city councillors expressing their dismay at how police officers handled a recent anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian protest where there were arrests when protesters broke the law. Protesters complained of excessive use of force, but the police maintain they only used necessary force to contain violent acts. One of these councillors, who sits on the police board, Lily Cheng, has since walked back her support of the final version of the letter. On Monday, Libby spoke with Toronto Police Association President John Reed about his reaction to that move, as well as his demand for the mayor to condemn the letter and remove two of the signatories from the police board. The mayor has since said she will not condemn the councillor's right to express their opinions. Paula Fletcher is among the councillors who signed the letter. She also spoke with Libby on Monday.
We are a world city, and we share the pain always of wars around the world. And really and truly, there are many protests everywhere around the world right now, not just in our city. There's protests in Toronto, there's protests in Ottawa, there's protests in Israel, there's protests in Germany. So we're just in that moment where we all have to just stay calm. I'd say that's our moment in Toronto, Libby.
But why were you concerned about the way the police handled it when they arrested people who were acting violently and unlawfully?
Well, we did hear from a number of people, and I did see the horses going in far beyond and far earlier. And once the horses are in there, things get really, they really go to ground. And so I just think that that was a moment to say, yes, enforce the law when it's broken. But let's remember, we all have the right in this country to peaceful assembly. It's in our charter rights.
I can see why they thought the force was excessive, because until then they've gotten away with making death threats, blocking hospitals, blocking roads, and intimidating Jewish communities with no action.
I would say that there are just so many tensions right now. These big demonstrations aren't necessarily doing what you've just said, but there are large numbers of people that are coming out to support. I wouldn't say they're there to support Hamas. I think that's wrong. I think they're there to support the Palestinian folks and what's going on in the Middle East. And they'd like a ceasefire.
John Reed said he thinks it's reckless because there were arrests. Those arrests were made for reasons. So why did you see fit, if those arrests were made for a reason, unlawful protest, why did you, take on the police on this again?
Well, I wouldn't say I took on the police on this, Libby. I think that when I signed that, it recognized that there are heightened tensions in the world in Toronto, and there may be situations, there are situations where people have the right to protest, the right to assembly, and everybody just needs to be careful with that. I think somebody who was trying to get home, they just lived in the neighborhood, they got arrested. I do believe that once you send the horses into a demonstration or any kind of assembly of any kind, that changes the nature of it. And they were there, they were sent in. So it just means you're going to have a melee and people are going to be arrested. So dial everything back, and I think it would be helpful if the president of the TPA dialed that back a bit too. I think the chief was very clear. We support the Jewish community. There's organizers there. We must be careful with anti-Semitism. We have to be careful with Islamophobia. We have to support our officers. It's not an easy time. So it's okay to remind people we do have this right in the country and in the city.
Do you think those two other signatories who are on the police board, should they be removed?
That's an issue that I think the chair of the board's going to look at that. But I don't think that they weren't directing the police force. If you're on the police services board, you're not allowed to go out and say, don't do this, don't do that. That gets you in big trouble. And I can't direct the police in my ward. And by the way, I have a great relationship with 55. I support them in everything that they do there and keeping our community safe, and got wonderful, wonderful officers in command there. So I just think that's a different question. And if he's raising that question, I think everybody needs to just calm down, dial it back, including John Reed.
Toronto City Councillor Paula Fletcher of Ward 14, Toronto Danforth. You're listening to the best of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. I'm Jane Brown. Coming up after the break, Canada increases defense spending, but is it enough? We discuss next.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Good isn't good enough. Make way for the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. This past week, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced a whopping $73 billion by 2044 toward military spending. Part of the strategy is strengthening Canada's defenses in the Arctic. But despite the massive number, the governing Liberals' plan does not meet the 2% of gross domestic product that NATO countries are required to spend. The update to the defense spending policy by Ottawa comes at a time when the military faces challenges around recruitment and retention of personnel, including more than 16,000 positions unfilled, and an additional 10,000 troops lacking adequate training to be deployed on military missions. It also comes ahead of Tuesday's federal budget. Libby discussed the development with our recovering politicians. Janet Ecker is a former Ontario PC cabinet minister. Sherry DeNovo is a former Ontario NDP MPP. And George Smitherman is a former Ontario Liberal cabinet minister.
I think that long lead time items are a particular challenge for our political environment. So when I look at that list, I wish that I could have be booked in for your show 20 years from today, where we could all go back and say, well, that was what they laid out. What actually happened? Because you can't even get government to stay attuned to commitments for pandemic planning, because as soon as the window of horizon allows people to forget about something, they move on to another. I'm really suspicious of any long-term number of estimating the procurement price of a piece of military apparatus for 10 or 15 years from now. Good luck on all of that. I think what the more important aspects of it are, what is in the shorter term spending plan? And I think the big issue here is that, you know, if Trump is successful, and there's a good prospect that he will be, I think Canada's going to be in the crosshairs of that call for the 2%. So I'm evaluating it mostly from that standpoint, and I'll be looking to see how that stands out in the upcoming budget, and very, very mindful of the risks that we face in a certain sense by underfunding the military culturally over governments, and for a long time, I'd have to say.
I'm sort of with George. I mean, this is a kind of a wish list. But at the end of the day, you know, what's really affecting Canadians and what's going to, you know, affect their vote when it comes down to it, I think for most Canadians is not going to be how much is spent on the military. It's going to be, you know, can I afford my mortgage? Is there a job for my kids, or are they going to live in the basement forever? I mean, I think that's what, you know, most folk are really concerned about. And I think the average Canadian is really suffering economically right now. Yes, it's better than Harper. And I agree with you, Libby. I mean, come on. I mean, they've been in government forever. And the same thing you can say about the Conservatives provincially, of course, here now, too. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be bread and butter, meat and potatoes issues. It's the economy and how it affects us personally. That's going to, you know, count at the ballot box.
You know, it is just so typical of the approach that the current prime minister and his government takes to issues. They don't do anything about it unless it falls into their favored, you know, virtue signaling topics until it becomes a political liability. So, let's make a big splashy announcement. You know, the government that brought us ArriveCan and the Phoenix Pay system are now going to roll out a multi-billion dollar defense program over 20 years.
Phoenix Pay started under Harper.
Well, I know. All right. But what did they do to fix it? I mean, you know, there is a government bureaucracy there that can be just as challenging for whoever's there. But the last time I checked, Stephen Harper and his record hasn't been on the ballot for over, you know, for a lot of years. So right now it's about Justin Trudeau and his record and what he's doing about it. And, you know, when you stand up and blame, as you say, you stand up, oh, well, it's the other guy's fault. That may work for the first year, 2 years, whatever. But excuse me, people voted for him to fix all of that. So let's stop with the carping and the whining and the blaming the other guy, and let's look at fixing it. And this is not going to fix it. I mean, this is just going to prove, I mean, George is absolutely right. You know, this is going to prove to be another great, wonderful federal government boondoggle. And Trump, if he wins, God help us. I mean, he's going to eat us for breakfast. The other thing that I think is important about this is that you're absolutely right that, you know, Canadians on a day-to-day basis are worried about, you know, lots of different issues, and defense is not one of them. But the environment out there is a lot different, and Canadians are seeing that. I mean, I don't think this federal government would have bothered to do any kind of announcement if they weren't seeing that Canadians were worried about our status these days and our defense these days, you know, in a very, very uncertain world. So it may not be something that we're thinking about when we trot off to the grocery store or the liquor store during the week, but it certainly is something that when people watch the news at night, you know, they worry about it, and they should worry about it, because the country is in serious trouble in lots of issues. This is one of them. Our allies just are scratching their heads about what to do with this. We're going to have a target on our back, if I can use that analogy, if Trump gets elected.
Janet Ecker, former Ontario PC cabinet minister, Sherry DeNovo, former Ontario NDP MPP, and George Smitherman, former Ontario Liberal cabinet minister. This is Zoomer Radio's Best of Fight Back. I'm Jane Brown. We learned this past week from Toronto police that over half of reported hate crimes so far this year are related to anti-Semitism, and last month saw the highest number of such occurrences in the past 3 years. The second highest number of hate crimes this year has been toward people in the LGBTQ+ community, followed by anti-Black, then anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, and anti-Palestinian hate crimes. It is with this information that Toronto Crime Stoppers has launched a hate crimes awareness program aimed at educating and encouraging citizens to report such crimes either directly to police or anonymously through Crime Stoppers. On Tuesday, Libby was joined by Sean Sporton, chair of Toronto Crime Stoppers, for a conversation.
Well, at Toronto Crime Stoppers, we're always aware of what's going on in the community and figuring out how we can help keep the community safe by making sure everybody knows we're a conduit for anonymous reporting. And so you may have seen prior campaigns like Auto Theft Campaign, Organized Retail Crime Campaign, which was all recently in the headlines. As you just mentioned, hate crimes is on the rise. Police are stating they believe it's underreported. So we felt it was important for Toronto Crime Stoppers to get out in front of this and remind the community that reporting crime is important and that there's a way to do it anonymously, and that's Toronto Crime Stoppers.
And why do you think the ability to report these things anonymously will help?
Well, I just think it's another conduit for folks who maybe don't want to speak to the police or don't trust the police or, frankly, just don't even want to be identified as being involved with that type of reporting. So we always encourage everyone to call 911 if it's an emergency. But if it's something that you know and you want to report it anonymously, that's what we're here for.
Okay. Just as a point of clarification, I talked about these numbers that we heard at your news conference. What's the difference between a hate crime call and a hate crime occurrence?
Well, that would be a question for the police, as they're the ones that categorize those things. But anyone who thinks they've witnessed a hate crime that wants to report it, anonymously, again, can use Crime Stoppers. They can call the police if they want to report it through normal channels. But a hate crime occurrence and a hate crime call really doesn't make any difference to Toronto Crime Stoppers. We just want the information so that we can help keep the community safe.
And have you had any of these before making the announcement of this campaign?
Well, we receive a lot of tips every year, over 7,000 tips and 15,000 follow-ups last year. So I can tell you that hate crimes has been reported in the past, along with every other crime you can think of.
Oftentimes, Crime Stoppers' success with, general crime is because there is a reward attached, but obviously that's not the case here.
Yeah, no, and 2020, Toronto Crime Stoppers stopped the reward program. And the reason we did that was we found that looking over the last 10 years prior to that, only 17% of tipsters picked up tips. And 50% of the tipsters were clicking no for the online for do they want a reward. And so we realized that we were putting money aside that really wasn't going back into the community in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we were paying about an average of $8,500. So we came up with a community rewards program where we put the money directly back into the community. So any number of ways. I mean, we've done playgrounds, we've done parquets, we've cleaned those up. And last year we spent $30,000 back into the community. So we feel this is a better way to get the money back into the community that we raise. And we realize that people are really calling in because doing the right thing is its own reward.
Do you have any kind of a target? I mean, the police have said they believe hate crimes are underreported. So do you have any kind of target at what you expect to see or to hear with this program?
No, we really don't know. The whole purpose of today's hate crimes weigh heavily on the entire community theme is merely to make sure that folks are aware we exist and that this is another area in which they can use us.
Sean Sporton, chair of Toronto Crime Stoppers, in conversation with Libby on Tuesday. You're listening to The Best of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. I'm Jane Brown. Still to come, what you had to say about the week that was and the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Zoomer Radio, pulling no punches with the best of Fight Back with Jane Brown.
Fight Back with Libby Znaimer has the most informed guests on the week's hot topics. And we also rely on you for your valued opinions. Here are some of this week's best calls. Jody in Toronto phoned about her rights as a Toronto citizen during protests.
People have the right to protest, to demonstrate, and to get their thoughts out there. It's a democracy. It's a right. But my question is, what about my rights as a citizen? I should be able to walk down the road not being blocked or drive without having my car blocked, without getting sprayed with that pink stuff that they spray all over the place. Where are my rights?
Helen in Mississauga also called in during our segment on protests related to the Israel-Hamas war.
I fully believe that there is no respect for the police any longer, and all the counselors and all the rest, they should be trying to help to sort of calm all this down by, like, there is laws. It used to be years ago, you couldn't stand a group of people on a corner or block a road or whatever without being asked to move along. So these things, they're so out of control, and it's wrong.
And now, Fight Back's Knockout Call of the Week.
There were a lot of great calls this week, but the winner of the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week is Tom in Ajax, who phoned in on Tuesday with an on-the-scene report during a protest.
I'm just leaving the beautiful downtown Whitby, where a huge, well, a fair-sized protest just rolled through there on the main street. About 30 tractor, farm tractors, cars, tractor trailers, people on the sidewalk with the mandatory F. Trudeau flag.
They are protesting what?
The carbon tax.
The carbon tax. And yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's something they feel strongly about, I guess, and the carbon tax is turning out to be somewhat of a pig in a poke, to use my old Irish grandfather's expression for something about nothing. And, it's gathering quite a bit of attention, and apparently I spoke to one of the people on the sidewalk, and they're expecting a whole bunch more people at Mark Holland's office in Ajax later, about half an hour or so.
That does it for today's Best of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. If you'd like to qualify for the Fight Back Knockout Call of the Week, phone us noon to one weekdays. Or if you have a comment, email us at fightback@zoomer.ca. Follow us on X at Fightback Libby and call our Fightback voicemail anytime at 416-367-9636. I'm Jane Brown. Join me again at the same time tomorrow when we'll round up the rest of the Best of Fight Back.
Best of Fight Back is produced by Jane Brown, Zeev Hadi, and Dan Christakos. Technical production by Ian Robertson. Executive producer, Moses Neimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.